All right, we got Pat Damiano, kettlebell coach. We have somebody here from the East Coast, right? Who's swinging clubs, swinging kettlebells, representing the unconventional crew. But also, you do a fair amount of just conventional training as well, mixing in the combos. You know, I reached out to you because, like I said, I really like what you're doing. And yeah, I think there's a lot of bullshit on Instagram. And, you know, you can kind of scroll through your feed and see all these people swinging kettlebells, but then you got guys like you who are explaining things, and then you got content from your classes and you're upbeat, and I bet you you have a ton of customers that are happy coming to see you and then feeling great when they leave. Talk to me a little bit about like your experience training thus far, and like where your career has kind of taken you, and what are some of the things that are the ups and downs of the career that you've kind of experienced so far? And yeah, just share with me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I guess I'll take it back to, I was 18 years old when I got my first personal training certification. I started training some people on my college campus just to, you know, get my feet wet. I always kind of knew this is what I wanted to do.
Hell yeah.
Something in this field. For a while, I thought it might be sports performance, whatever it is, but something in this field. So that was college to about 22, 23. When I was 23 years old, I actually moved back to New York. So college was in Tampa. 23, I moved back to New York to be the head CrossFit coach at a CrossFit gym.
Okay.
So I was doing that full time. That was like my full gig. I was teaching probably like 25 to 30 CrossFit classes a week, and also had like some managerial duties. So my like main, I guess you could say, initial background is primarily group fitness for the most part, because that's kind of how... that's kind of where I started, like genuinely build my career.
Yeah.
Was in the CrossFit space.
When you're doing 35 classes a week, I bet you like those skills just kind of build up so quickly, and you get your feet wet. Yeah. You're in front of people. Like, you know, you kind of have to think on your feet and modify at times. And, you know, that's a lot of sessions per week to just keep on building up. So you're just thrown in the fire CrossFit. Now, tell me, how old are you? Because you got in when you were 18. So how many years ago was that?
Yeah, 12 years. I'm 30.
Okay, coolio. Awesome. I also got into the industry when I was 18, certified, nice. And just thrown in the fire right away. And it's like, it's very rare that you get like guys like you, guys like myself, girls too, whatever, that have that many hours under their belt, you know, and that many years and continue in the field. A lot of folks are training part-time and have another full-time job. I think a lot of Instagram people, it looks like their full-time gig is training, and yet like their part-time gig is training, and they have like a tech job, or they're doing something else full-time. So it's cool to see you doing that. And like I said, I love like the clips of you teaching. It just seems like, you know, you're a really upbeat coach. Anyway, so you go back to New York and you kind of been flourishing there, huh?
Yeah. So I was 23 then. So started doing that full-time gig with a CrossFit. The gym that I was at rebranded to be CrossFit, and you know, they did what a lot of CrossFit gyms was. They kind of took the name CrossFit away to be more appealing to people.
Yep.
So I started teaching some boot camp, is the way I describe it. Boot camp classes, still teaching the CrossFit. So I started to get like a little, I guess, like mix in what I was teaching there. So just to get different styles in. So very slowly over time, probably over like a 4 to 5 year period, I started to pick up some personal training clients, and then I started slowly taking my role down. You know, I was meant to like maybe 20 classes, more personal training, and just kind of started taking on less classes and getting into personal training. It's just more lucrative. I was kind of enjoying a little bit more at that time. So slowly over the years, that got me to the point where I wasn't teaching any classes anymore for anything. And then just fully personal training at like some small group training, like 2 to 5 people at a time.
Yeah.
And that's basically what I'm doing now fully, is just the personal training. And then the classes that you're talking about, I do teach one class a week, every Saturday, called Weekend Warriors, where we do all like the kettlebells and sandbags and stuff. And that's where I get like a decent amount of content and kind of could like shine my personality in a sense.
Yeah.
Because I genuinely, my favorite thing to do is probably group fitness. I'm not a super analytical, over sciencey type of coach. So like, I don't need me and one other person to get like the greatest, most perfect results in the entire universe. And we got to do 80% this and this and that. Like, I like when people just come in, throw down, have a good time, and the music's loud and everybody's, cause it works, right?
Yeah, group totally.
It does work. A lot of people shit on it. And I did at one point in my career, but it does work. It's fun. It gets people moving. So like, and the energy is just exciting. So I do love that. Personal training is just a little bit more of a option for a career, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So that's what kind of keeps me there. But yeah, group fitness, I love it.
Yeah, dude, I'm the same. I'm with you. But I think that's a testament to the teacher, right? The teacher creates the energy. The teacher creates the culture. People show up for you. It doesn't matter what space you're teaching in. I'm sure you've trained at several different gyms and different places. And people go because of you. At least that's what I'm figuring out. I'm learning that people just love that energy. And I'm with you. I don't like to get super technical. It's like you got to meet people where they're at. Like I think the more we get into our craft, like teaching clubs and teaching Mace, like there's a level of clear communication that needs to be kind of put out there, if you will, that you know, people, so that people could understand a little bit of exactly like what's happening, the hand switches, different positions. Now you can call different positions, different things, whatever. But like, I feel like I find myself getting a little bit more technical. So did you have, or do you still have a hard time teaching some of those unconventional tools, mace, clubs, sandbags, kettlebells? Kettlebell is a little bit more universal nowadays, but do you have trouble teaching skills like mace 360s or club shield casts or any sort of like cueing with the clubs? And when you do find a hurdle, like what are some of your protocols to break those hurdles down and get people just in the flow of things?
It's one of the, like you were kind of touching on it before, it's one of the good things about group fitness is like you get really good, or you can get really good at teaching people group fit, how to do movements, because you see so many different people and you see so many different issues pop up, specifically in something like CrossFit, which is a little bit more technical, where you're genuinely trying to find an alternative and not just like, just do that instead then. Right. So something that's similar. So like teaching so much CrossFit, it gave me the ability to then teach a higher skill movement like clubs and maces and things like that, or Bulgarian bags, and then scale them down. So once I started to get a little bit more comfortable with the steps, so I won't lie, for a while I was kind of like, hey guys, try this. Right.
Yes.
And it didn't go well. No. And it was primarily, the only reason I did that is because my clients were like, hey, what's this thing that you're doing? I'm like, it's a mace. I'm just spinning around my head. So like I used it with them because they asked about it. I was still pretty new to it. So like, I wasn't like, hey guys, try this new thing that I just started and have no idea how to teach. So I just want to get that out there. But once I started to kind of like build steps, it's like, all right, this is step 1, 2, and 3. Here are some different cues. This is kind of what you want. Here's a way to scale it back. I do feel very comfortable now teaching people how to do things like 360s with the club, Bulgarian bags and stuff like that. And I always have like a super basic way of just pulling it back. There's some people it doesn't feel good, or it just doesn't work and they don't have the coordination. So I've really actually gotten into, and it's how I start people from the bottom anyway, is with clubs and mace 360s, like I'll have people do just basically a super slow halo. It's basically a halo that you would do with a kettlebell, just to like get the motion in. It's not as athletic. It doesn't need as much coordination, but you're still getting the motion in and they still feel like they're part of the group and not doing anything completely different than people.
Yeah. Totally. Like the lever's different. People could control the bell lever around their head versus now a club a little bit longer. Then you go mace. I find that the longer the lever, the more apprehensive people are to try. You know,
people are very hesitant with the mace because it's like, it's trickier.
Yeah, totally. And it's weird and it's not conventional. Nobody really talks about this. And the great thing is you see more and more people doing some of this stuff, you know, guys like you. And that's another question I want to talk to you about, is like, how did you get into maces, clubs and kettlebells and sandbags, Bulgarian bags? Because it's like, for me, I got into training back in 2007 when I was 18, just like you. And I started with the bodybuilding lifts, you know, splitting chest, back, shoulders, legs, arms, you know, stuff like that. And I trained a lot that way. And then I started learning more about compound lifts and then cross body stabilization, single sided exercises. And I started getting comfortable with those. And then I want to say around 2018, clubs and maces and kettlebells just allowed me to find a new love for exercise again. And then I started getting really good at doing it for myself, going to seminars, learning how to break it down. So how did you get into unconventional tools and who are some of the people that inspired you?
So I've always kind of, it's just like something that's in my, I like the thing that's a little different. It just always kind of has been, you know, I had the same path, right? Bodybuilding. I then got into CrossFit, got into Olympic weightlifting. And I still don't know fully how I found Onnit, like the company Onnit. which I'm sure you're familiar with. And I don't know how, but I just came across them. I was like, oh, this mace thing looks cool. I probably like started following Primal Soldier, probably something along those lines. Actually, that probably is exactly what happened. I started following him because I was like messing around with some like kettlebell flow. I was like the flashier kettlebell stuff. And then I was like, cool, this mace and club looks cool. So I bought like a mace and a club, had absolutely no idea what I was doing with them. That's probably right around the same time as you, 2018. And then for a while, they actually collected dust. I didn't really do anything with them because I didn't know what I was doing. And just I kind of then got into a little bit of a bodybuilding phase for like 6 months. So I was doing dabbling with them, not too much. And then it was 2021, so almost 3 years ago, I started doing jiu-jitsu. And that naturally kind of leads into a little bit more of the unconventional kettlebell side. So I started to dabble with the club kettlebells and maces just a little bit more, and then really got into them. I felt better doing jiu-jitsu in general too. And exactly what you said, I just found like I was enjoying my workouts again, because I had a period of time where I was just like doing whatever the hell came to my mind, which is fine because I was focused on building my business at the time, whatever. It was COVID, so like there was other stuff on my mind. But that's how I kind of got like really into like, I'm going to make these a real thing now. I'm going to really, I'm going to get a few more clubs, a few more maces, heavier kettlebells so I can progress with all of that stuff. And that's kind of how I just dove into that. And I, like you said, I enjoyed it and just kept diving in and kept trying to learn new things with it.
Yeah, it's so fun. Primal Soldier definitely kicked off like my inspiration as well. I did a kettlebell workshop with him and Marcus Martinez back in the day, 2018. He was the guy that was doing it and on it back then. And it just, like I said, allowed me to fall in love with kettlebells or with training again in general. And then I start intertwining a lot of the skills that I've learned with already the things that I knew. And it was a combination of conventional, unconventional, conventional, unconventional. I didn't completely abandon all the conventional stuff because, again, when you're building business, and that's what I found out is that you got to meet people where they're at and deliver something that's very good for them and something that they expect. And then slowly start to intertwine. Hey, check out this mace. I'm going to teach you how to switch it. And then we're going to start doing some functional movements. We're going to squat. We're going to lunge. We're going to side lunge. We're going to press. And we're going to go from there. Let me know how you feel. And then little by little, it's like, oh, this is cool. And then you start making those progressions. And like you said, the BJJ world, the fighting world, way more maces and clubs in that field, right? For some reason, it just seems like you're going to move and fight better with this. I mean, I think like not just fighters, I think every athlete should incorporate some of these motions. The building of the soft tissue, the building of the tissues in the shoulders, specifically the hips, the ankles, the knees, the feet, and you need to be sharp and strong and durable in those areas when you're fighting, grappling, boxing, whatever. Because, you know probably more than anybody, I don't do any of the fighting or the grappling or anything like that. I like to say I'm a lover, not a fighter. But in the world of fighters, the clubs are massive, and the maces, they're just a big thing. So talk to me about your experience in the jiu-jitsu world. Like, how long have you been doing it, and how has it changed your body? How has it changed the way you look at exercise and your recovery and all that stuff?
So just to go back real quick, like that's where maces and clubs basically came from. You know, if we run it back, I don't know how many years, like, you know, Indian and Persian, and everybody argues as to who created them first, whatever. But, you know, that's where maces and clubs came from. The wrestlers, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
They transfer so well to that. But jiu-jitsu's been great. I'm almost 3 years in. So I'd say the biggest, I mean, like, it's definitely increased my confidence and things along those lines. My body's kind of the same, I'd say. I'm obviously a little stronger in different areas.
Are you eating more, would you find?
Yeah.
I got to imagine. I'm
fucking hungry after. it's a good thing and a bad thing, right? The jiu-jitsu, I love it, and it's great, and it gets my high intensity conditioning, and like I never have to get on a rower or bike or anything like that and sprint, right, which is great because I hate that. So I get my intensity there. It's just a great environment. It's great to learn new things, but it definitely beats me up, which is, it's not predictable, right? If I do a workout and have shoulder press and rows and push-ups or whatever, I know my upper body is going to be sore tomorrow. If I do split squats and squats, I know my legs are going to be sore tomorrow. Jiu-jitsu is not really like that. So it's had to, you know, you kind of have to be ready for that, which is unfortunate, but like, I'm also okay with doing whatever the hell comes to my mind when I walk into the gym. So that helps out.
Right.
But it has definitely changed the way I train, because for a period of time, I was doing like three really hard workouts a week, kettlebells, clubs, maces, all that stuff. And then going to jujitsu twice a week. And I was just floored. And I've kind of altered that now also, because like, I like to work out. So I would like to, I would prefer to move in some sort of way almost every day. So I couldn't do that. I was basically at about five times a week. So I've altered my workouts now to, I'm working out five-ish times a week and I'll go to jujitsu twice. But when I work out, the intensity is just a little bit lower. And I notice a drastic change, just the way I feel. One, I think I'm getting stronger because of that, because I'm just able to accumulate more volume just over time, but I'm not beating myself up as much. It kind of opened my eyes to like, one, I'm also getting older, so that's a factor, but it's opening my eyes to, hey, your central nervous system might be getting fried up and you need to be mindful of that. It's not just what your muscles can handle that day. Like, there's more that goes into it. And that's been a nice eye opener, especially because most of the people I train are a little older. So that's helped me in like a formulating a programming workout standpoint to be a little more mindful of not kind of beat the crap out of people and myself all the time. Cause it was a big mind shift. Cause I like to just get after it.
Sure.
And in the gym, it's more controllable. In jujitsu, it's hard, right? If somebody's going to put it on you, you can't just lay there and let them, right? You have to kind of push and pull. But the gym, I could pull back. So it's been nice.
Yeah. I think about this a lot as I get older. You know, I'm not playing sports as I used to. And I find that inner animal in me wants to get out and do something of the sort. I don't necessarily feel like I want to do jujitsu. I know it's like really popular and I've been listening to Joe Rogan forever. And there was a time in my early or my late teens when I started, when I first started training, where we got into like Muay Thai and boxing, and I was learning how to hold the pads and everything. And I'd use that. I still use it a lot with my clients, but I never got into fighting. I never really like felt called to it. I was just more of like, I'd rather watch and do that stuff. But I played soccer and football my whole life. I just feel like I'm looking for those outlets to get that energy out and play and run around and compete, you know? And I feel like as we get older, those outlets shrink, you know? And then you start having kids and your business gets bigger. And it's like, when the fuck are you going to go play soccer or play basketball or whatever, you know, or go do jujitsu? I think if you're doing it now, do your best to like stay in something like that as long as possible, because it does add that factor to our development. You know, like, we're constantly in some sort of like resistance, but at the same time, I think what you said was very smart. It's like paying attention to your nervous system. Am I overworked? Am I burning out? Because we can easily do that, especially when we're building business. Now, you were talking about building business during COVID. You're in New York. The restrictions and protocols out there were much like here in Chicago, very restrictive. How did you get around some of those parameters to keep people excited about exercise? And I don't know about you, but I boomed during COVID, right? I went to people's homes. I had some people come into my studio. It was all under the table. Nobody really knew what was going on. I was working for myself. Talk to me a little bit about your experience with that and how you kind of hurdled some of those things and where you're at now.
Yeah. It was a lot of Fight Club type of stuff going on.
Yeah.
You just don't talk about it.
So
at the time, I had a pretty decent client list, and I was very fortunate enough that those clients didn't really get financially affected by COVID.
Yep.
So they were able to continue training. I still, you know, adjusted prices because, you know, training somebody on Zoom is not the same as in person. So I was fortunate enough to do a decent amount of Zoom training, which is it. That's what we had to do, right? I still have PTSD every time I get on Zoom, but I did a lot.
Imagine if you were a high school teacher though. Like, imagine if you had like 30 kids in a fucking class and you had to figure out a way to teach on Zoom. Like, forget that.
Do it, which we'll get into in a little bit. I did something similar to that. So my clients were pretty consistent, which was nice. And some of them, you know, they would train with me maybe once or twice a week and then take group fitness twice a week. Group fitness was gone, so they added another day, right? And that got them comfortable to adding another day. And then, which then led into when things were back to normal, they kept that second or third day. So that's where it ended up being good for me in the long run. But I was pretty consistent with my clients, which is nice. And I also, I don't do it as much anymore, but I was training a lot of high school kids at that time as a big part of my business. And when that COVID happened, they had nothing, right? Besides half-assed school. So I started doing a lot of Zoom group classes with kids. So like three times a week. I had like 20 or so kids on a Zoom call. Just working out, you know, like I would tell them like, hey, fill up a backpack with some books. We're going to use it as a sandbag. We're going to do a bunch of bodyweight stuff. So that was actually really good. And that introduced me to a lot of kids I had never met before business-wise, right? Because I knew probably seven kids. I tell a mom, Facebook, this and that. Boom, all of a sudden I've got 20 kids in a Zoom, which is great. Then people started to get a little bit more comfortable being in person. This is probably May or June. It was nice out, but gyms were still closed. So I started doing more stuff, just, you know, like you did, meet up at my house. I was in my parents' garage. I had some adjustable dumbbells, a few kettlebells. We'd work like that. Got things going there. Same thing with the kids. They started to get more comfortable. All was kind of like moving pretty smooth. Then me and my now wife at the time, girlfriend, moved into where we're at. It was August, end of August. I was thinking to myself, okay, gyms still aren't open. People are starting to get more comfortable, and I don't think gyms are going to open for a while. Long story short, the way we're at now, two-car garage, gutted that, made it a gym, and I was training people like crazy out of that. Nice. And that was really what kind of started things cranking. You know, garage door was open. Everybody was comfortable with it. It was fine. But yeah, same as you, COVID made me do some things that I wasn't necessarily going to do unless that probably happened, which was good.
Yeah, yeah. Same with me. Dude, before COVID, like, I had just quit my job as a high school teacher. So that's why I made that analogy, because I was in that world for a few years and it pushed me out. It's just too much red tape, too much politics. Wasn't able to be myself when I taught, which I felt limited, you know, but there was nowhere else for kids to go. There was nowhere else for people to go other than the people who were willing to provide the service and, you know, forget about all the protocols and the whatever hurdles that they put on us. Like I figured it out. I just made myself work, and it's either do or die. And I wasn't going to let, you know, that type of situation stop me from doing what I had to do. I mean, if you think about it, fitness people during this time are so much more needed now than ever. We need people to keep others motivated, to talk about nervous system health, to talk about meditation, breath work, and how physical, mental, emotional, it's all one thing, you know? So that being said, like, how do you manage your mental and emotional health? Are you meditating? Are you doing breath work? Do you journal? Do you ground? All this stuff, these buzzwords now are very much more popularized because of bigger names talking about this stuff. But how has that impacted you, your business, your practice, your mind, your body? Do you have any practices like that?
The real answer is no. I wish I did. I've tried to implement them over and over again. I'm from New York, right? You're from a big city too. It's just embedded in us to just go, 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 go.
Go, go, go. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And sitting down, I've tried. I really want to. It's actually it's not my New Year's resolution because I hate that term. But it is definitely part of something I want to do because, you know, the second half of last year, as I was growing on social media, trying to now turn it more into a business, like I had a very big and new stressor in my life where, you know, I was constantly trying to work on things, but it wasn't as organized. You know, personal training is pretty straightforward. Person comes in, they're here 6 to 7 a.m. Next person comes in 7 to 8. And then when you're done with your clients, you're done. That's it. Right. But this was like a new, like, hey, you're building a business. So I had a big stressor added in and I was not ready for it, like mentally. And ready to handle the stress of that. So I've been trying to maybe add a little more breath work or meditation or something like that, or just time where it's just shut off.
Yeah.
And I haven't been very good at it. I've tried a bunch in the past, just, you know, being in this space for so long, you try everything. And I haven't really been able to keep one stick, but I would like to try because I'm not good at it and I know I really need it.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because everyone's practice is all over the place. Some people have it. Some people don't meditate. Some people do it every day. You know, I hear a lot of mixed reviews. There's Alex Hormozi is funny about it. He's like, if you have this 3-hour morning routine and it's meditation and journaling, it's like, that's derailing you from getting your shit done. There's nothing that's going to make you sales like reaching out to people. And that's it. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, do your ads, reach out to your friends, reach out to strangers, reach out to more people in your DMs, make your fucking money and do your thing. You don't have to do a 3-hour morning routine. And I get that. I totally do. But on the other side of it, it's like, when you're going all the time, and all you're thinking about is this customer, that customer, how am I going to funnel these people in? How am I going to promote this class or this program? And then you got to go home, and then you have time with your wife, and then you're talking about other things, you know, vacations, adding more people to the family, having children, whatever it is. It's like information overload. And yeah. I find myself like sometimes just not knowing how to handle all the emotion. So I find that at least whatever quiet time people have, like do your thing, whether that's meditation, whether that's taking a nap, whether that's journaling, I feel like having some sort of quiet time, fill your own cup up before you start filling everybody else's cup up is super important, yeah. especially for guys like us who are putting our energy outwards all the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah, let me ask you this.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's doable. Yes. You know, it doesn't take I don't think like it should take a ton of time. Like for me, it's 5 to 10 minutes of just, you know, 6 seconds inhale, 6 seconds exhale, set a timer, focus on the breathing. And then what I really like to do is after a little bit of focused breath work, I just like to let my brain go. And then I find myself coming up with all kinds of ideas and a lot of things that just pop up like, oh, this is cool. All right. Maybe that's an idea I can start to implement. And you know, I find that it's very therapeutic and it feels good. Like it gets me excited. I digress.
I like that.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think about owning your own space? Does that ever cross your mind? Is that something that you want to do? Pat Damiano Fitness or create like an on it yourself? Or what's that? What's some of those thoughts?
It has definitely crossed my mind. So the gym I'm at now, where I train my clients, I just rent space. I just moved to this gym 4 months ago, and I was at the other gym for like 7.5 years. It's the gym I started at as the CrossFit coach. So I recently moved. I was going through probably a 6 or 7 month period where I was thinking to myself, okay, do you want to open up your own space? You probably have enough clients where you can make it happen. How big? Where do you want it? You know, there's so much fitness in this area. I was like, do I open up where I live, which is 25 minutes from the gym that I work at, but most of my clients are at the gym that I work at. So the conversation has come up a bunch with myself, and I was looking at spaces and I kind of just halted for a second. And then like right around when I halted and was like, let me just kind of stay doing what I'm doing right now. That's when I like got a big spurt in growth on Instagram. And I was like, okay. And like, this is what always kept me from definitely doing it was there's so much opportunity in this field online. Do I want to take on the overhead and whatever headaches and complications come from owning my own spot? So I always told myself, you have to give a real honest go at it with the online stuff for at least a couple years, maybe 3 years before you decide maybe it didn't work or it wasn't for you or whatever. So now that I've kind of had that growth, I'm able to build a little bit of an online business right now, and I'm working on that. The having my own place is definitely in the back.
Got it.
It's something I would like to do. The way I describe it, I've talked to my wife about this a few times because it would be nice, right? It'd be fun, but it doesn't always turn into fun when it's like it has to pay all your bills. So if I ever got to the point where it's like I could open up a decently sized space and it doesn't have to make a ton of money, it could kind of be a little bit more of a playground. Maybe it's just a spot people want to come and take a couple classes a week and learn some unconventional stuff for kettlebells or whatever it is, but it doesn't have to pay all my bills because maybe the online stuff is doing that. Then I would think about it. But right now it's way
on the back burner. Yeah. No, it makes sense. If you're not 100% all in, I would say don't fucking do it because there's so much in there's so much involved, and it's either
you have your own space, right?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And it, like, honestly, dude, if like four, so we're about to hit our 3-year anniversary February 15th. Thank you. And it's been awesome. Like, I couldn't have dreamt of this, you know, when I was a high school teacher. If you would have asked me when I was a high school teacher if I would ever own my own gym, I'd be like, no, I wouldn't even want to do that. When I quit the teaching world and I started renting and calling up old clients and building that up again, I still was like, oh, I'm cool just renting space. I don't need to deal with all the other stuff. But I saw a system in place where I was like, okay, I think I can make this happen if all the things like align properly. I was in a position to buy out somebody else's lease, and that whole thing fell through. Thank God, because the landlord was a crazy person. And then you know, a couple of my customers have a real estate company, and they were telling me about some of their properties. And they're like, if you're interested, come check out this basement space. It's right in this downtown area of the suburb that I went to high school in. Now I live 40 minutes from my gym space. So I have this 40-minute commute back and forth, which is good and bad. It's good because it forces me to stay in my area when it's time to work and build. I have that solitude time where I take 40 minutes of podcast listening or book listening and learning and getting excited. And then once I'm here at 6 a.m., I'm here and I'm building my shit up. We started this and I started doing my renting and training again after high school, being a high school teacher in 2019. Then it was building up really nicely. Then COVID hit and then it was slowed down for a little bit. But then, you know, like you, April, May, June, it started booming back up again. Found myself in this space, really liked it. And it just kind of like happened on its own, super organically. Mm-hmm. And it was the numbers worked. And if the numbers don't work and you're trying to like really try to make ends meet, then it's too much pressure. But the numbers were working. I was positive every month. This was good. And then I developed a system where I just started renting space to other trainers. So now part of my business is not only getting customers as clients, but finding the best trainers in the area, bringing them here and giving them the best, like the same kind of like renting thing that you do, the best opportunities to make as much money as possible. Because I'm sure you've worked at gyms before where there was an owner, they give you clients, but then they also take 70% or 60% or whatever.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, trainers are training long. And that's fine. They train for 2-3 years or whatever max. And then they get pissed and they take those customers and they go open up a gym somewhere else down the street. It's the same pattern that keeps up happening every time. So I decided to not have that structure and have a structure where trainers were happy making money. They get paid first. They pay their rent at the end of the month. It's all good. So I've been doing that at the same time, building my customer base and keeping that steady. You know, training 30, 40 sessions a week, all on my own, no other business partners. So in that regard, it's been great. And then like I had opportunities to expand the space. So last year we expanded the space. I brought in a chiropractor. I brought in a physical therapist.
Nice.
They're subleasers for me. So it works out really nicely. We're all aligned philosophically as far as like health, healing, longevity, performance. And, you know, there's a bunch of individual entities working down here. It's great, but me as the leader, I'm trying to do more things to make us one cohesive unit and create more of like that community aspect as opposed to all being independents and all that stuff. So I'll tell you, it's a big learning curve. It's a whirlwind of information, but I've become so much better because like, I'm just on top of my shit. I'm forced to be on top of my shit as opposed to just, you know, letting things kind of dwindle and then, you know, you're in a pickle. So I'm that much stronger and better and that much more focused because of this endeavor. And I'm in this for at least the next 5 years. My goal is to do this for 10. You know, I interview a lot of people like you that are in the fitness space. A lot of them have their own gyms. And I realize that the shelf life of a gym owner is like 10 to 12 years.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
After that, they either sell the gym or, you know, do something else. So I realize that and I have a plan for the next 5 to 10 years. I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to roll with it. I'm going to keep doing my thing. And then after that's done, you know, I'll still be a 40-year-old guy, 45 max at 10 years. I'm 35 now, young enough to do my thing. It's a lucrative business. There's a lot of money to be made. If you keep building your skills, you can keep on attracting more and more customers and the best trainers and having workshops and all that stuff. But it's definitely been a whirlwind, but I love it. You know, this gym is an expression of my heart. Underground Fitness, the heart chakra is green. I don't know how much you go into the chakra stuff, but so I just look at them as 7 energy centers, 7 nerve plexuses that are from the base of the pelvis all the way through the top of the head. You know, you got the heart in the middle, which is the center point, and the color that it's associated with the heart chakra is green. So then I was like, this is a reflection of my heart, Underground Fitness Studio. It's unconventional. We're a little esoteric, but it's been working for me. People that subscribe to that same feeling are the customers that keep coming down. So, you know, I just stick with that, roll with it. I'm nothing but myself. And I just try to keep learning and talking to guys like you to see what you're doing differently, what you're doing that's working, and keep building it, you know?
It's great. I mean, it's all you can do is, like you said, pour your heart and soul into it. And then the people who want to come are going to come, and the ones who are aligned with that vision are, you know, the buy-in's going to be huge and the retention will be great. And
And I try to make sure
40,000 people in there, you know?
No. There's a lot of ways that you could run a gym. There's a lot of ways you can do it. And every gym is going to be running it differently. But you put your main mission out there, and my mission, Underground's mission, is to help people physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And the people that are down with that philosophy are the ones that keep coming down here, and they realize that I run what I run, upbeat, high level, always feeling better afterwards. And it's been rocking and rolling, and I look forward to the next 5 years for sure. And then after that, we'll sign another 5-year deal and then go from there. But thanks, man. So how else do you learn information? Are you listening to a lot of podcasts? If so, who are your favorite ones? Do you listen to audiobooks or read actual copies of books? Like, what's your process when it comes to learning?
So I try not to take in too much fitness information in terms of learning, right? I obviously do just through Instagram, and, you know, if someone I think is interesting is on a podcast, I'll listen to them and stuff like that. But I try not to take in too much because there is so much, and it's just, it turns into information overload for me. So if I am going to learn something, I do enjoy podcasts depending on the person. I tend to find people that I like and then just kind of stick with their stuff. So like, I'm a big fan of Jocko Willink, right? So I'll go through a lot of his podcasts. I read a bunch of his books, right? That's kind of how I go about things. I have read a lot of like self-help books, whatever terminology you want to put, whether it's, you know, mentally trying to get your shit together or business or financial or marketing. That's where I kind of take in most of my information. I've read like a lot of books, physical books, and I've graduated to the Kindle, which is a solid upgrade. And totally. I'll do a lot of fiction, which is not reading, but it's
definitely reading.
It's definitely reading. It's not learning, but it might be kind of like we were talking about before, my meditative type of thing.
I would argue that it is learning. I mean, there's so much that you can learn from fiction, and many fiction stories are based off real life type of scenarios. Yeah, especially if there's a good author. And I never was a big reader when I was younger, but I realize now I'm still not even a good reader. I don't take physical books. There'll be times, you know, I have a library here at the gym where I'll take a couple of books off the shelf and look through it and whatever. But I realized that I retain so much more information auditory. So I would just listen to books. I put them on 1.3 speeds and be like, oh, wow, okay, I'm taking in this information. I like it. And specific authors, they do a really good job of like bringing all the material back together at the end of the book. And I always look forward to the big points that are made 3/4 into the book, towards the end of the book. And I'm like, there's something, it's building up to something, kind of like when you're watching a movie and it's like you're creating this imagination in your head. And it's a beautiful thing that I recently started 2016. I started like listening to books and realizing, wow, okay, I retain so much more this way. And it is a wonderful feeling when you get clicks, when you get like the a concept clicks in your head. You're like, oh, okay,
exactly.
It's like real time bettering yourself, you know,
for sure. It's funny that you say that, because if I listen to a book, I retain absolutely nothing.
Really?
Like even because I'm too distracted. Like 10 minutes go by, I'm like, I have no idea what was just said.
Interesting.
Even I think part of the reason I don't do like I don't do a lot of podcasts or like audiobooks is for that reason. If I'm going to read, I have to sit down and read it. And if I'm going to listen to a podcast, I would 9.5 times out of 10, I want to sit down and watch it, which is why I think I don't do a lot of them anymore, at least just because I'm busy. I don't do the throw podcast on in a car and listen to it on my commute, because I just don't retain anything when I do
that.
Yeah.
How long is your commute?
It's like 25 minutes. It's not long. But it's enough time where, you know, I could kill a couple podcasts a week. Definitely. Probably, but it just, you know, it just doesn't retain for me. I've tried it. I've probably started, I don't think I've ever finished an audiobook. I've started probably 10 of them and just falls off. But it's funny you say that actually about fiction reading, because I don't know how much email marketing or just marketing in general that you do in terms of, you know, whether it's your business or online stuff, but I've gotten into that a little bit more. And now that you bring it up, I think reading fiction probably makes me a little better at like storytelling.
Yes.
Because that's kind of what I take into whether I'm sending an email or writing a caption, which for me are basically the same thing. But something like that, instead of just being like, hey, here's the workout I did today, is like trying to tell a story, maybe give a lesson and make it entertaining. And I probably picked up on that without realizing it by reading so much fiction.
That's cool. I love hearing that. You know, it's a good message for youngsters to hear if they don't like reading or they have trouble reading. You know, it's definitely mental fitness. It's definitely something good for you to do and to get a break from your phone and, you know, not be so taxed by the infinite amount of information coming through that device. That's a whole nother story. But you were talking about not taking in too much fitness knowledge. And I think that's very wise. And I've also gone that route. Like, don't get me wrong, I love listening to fitness people talk, but I take it with a grain of salt because there's so much conflicting information.
Yeah.
And like when I've gone into a certain path of, like, let's say fasting, for example, like there's a lot of people that talk about the benefits of fasting, how you get into, you know, you start burning fat for fuel, you take a break from digesting, so your hormones are balanced, and, you know, there's a lot of benefit there. But then you got people trashing fasting and how it's not supposed to be good for you. You shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that. And like that type of conflicting information kills me.
Yeah.
You know, it's so like hard. You get thrown off your anchor system, so to speak. And you're like, oh, what do I believe? Should I stay believing this? Do I not believe in this anymore? Because this guy said it. And it's like, well, fasting is a great way for me to go about my day. It's something that works because I'm able to adhere to specific protocols. I don't like breakfast, so I skip it. I wait till 2 o'clock. My body's never looked better. I've never had any more energy than I do. So it's like, oh, so there's some truth here, right? I'm not going fucking crazy. And that's the thing. Like when you have all this information coming to you in all these ways. And then the thing that really kind of like hurts me the most is that people are condescending with their content and for all the right reasons, because it gets them views. It's like, it's hot. People are like it when, you know, someone's like, don't do this and do this, you know? So it's
dogma
like,
is great for views.
Yeah, totally. And that kind of just like bothers me a little bit. But at the same time, like I've also found the people that I like and that I trust, and then, you know, I'll listen to them and also see what works on myself and all that. But it is, I don't know. It's just sad because we got to find a way to decipher truth versus fiction. And I guess there might be shards of truth everywhere. And we just got to like turn our brain on to finding it. I don't know. Cause I guess in this information age where it's still very new and everyone's learning as we go, and like guys like you and I have grown up with all different kinds of technology. I'm sure the first cell phone you had was a little flip phone. And then little by little, it started, you know, and we grew up with that. We're like the only generation, our millennial. Would you consider yourself a millennial?
Yeah, I think I technically am.
Yeah, right. So like we've grown up, we're the only ones that have grown up kind of like with the evolving of this as we were growing up too.
Right.
And now that we're adults and we've kind of gone through the whole thing, and now we're seeing how it's going the next level with the advancements of AI, it's just very difficult to discern truth from fiction, what's real and what's not real. And I think this is dangerous for everybody.
Yep.
You know? So
like, and it
No, go ahead. What were you gonna
say? I was gonna say, like, I think the biggest issue with it is, I mean, it sounds so cliche, but everybody's looking for the quick fix. So hey, try three things to do this and that. And what I've, you know, exactly what you were just saying about yourself with fasting is like, I don't think, unfortunately, and this is primarily in the nutrition space, I think training is a little bit more black and white, not fully, but a more black and white than the nutrition field. The nutrition field is so gray. And I think the issue is people aren't willing to just experiment on themselves, right? Like, I've been doing that my entire life, right? Someone said, try intermittent fasting. I tried it. I felt good. So I just kept doing it, right? And then somebody said, hey, maybe your stomach is killing you because you eat a ton of broccoli and Brussels sprouts all the time. I'm like, huh, I haven't had those in a little bit. It feels good. Like, people don't want to experiment with themselves. They just want someone to be like, here, do this.
Yeah. And in this nutrition, is right. This is wrong.
Right. And in nutrition, I don't think that works at all because everybody's so different from different parts of the world and so on and so forth. And the meat in New York is better than here, but worse than, like, there's just so much stuff. So the nutrition gets very gray. And the information overload of it and the dogmatic approach of like, don't eat this because you're going to do X, Y, and Z. It's very, there's just so much of it and people aren't willing to experiment on themselves to find out what works for them, right? There's, if I got 2,000 people in a room, keto might be the worst thing in the world for 1,000 of them and the best thing in the world for 1,000 of them.
Yeah.
It's just like two bricks just bashing against each other with all of that stuff. So
What are your thoughts about Gary Brecka? He's been popping up recently. I don't know how much you've heard about him. He's the guy from, so he's blown up because of Dana White. I'm sure you've seen Dana White out there. I just got off my 3-day water fast. I look great. Yeah. I've never felt better. Gary has helped me, blah, blah, blah. So what I'm realizing is Gary Brecka, who owns this company called 10X, and he's not a doctor or a fitness guy or anything. He was like at this insurance fella who was like looking at death certificates and all this information and data of people who died early and whatever, you know, just kind of looking off information from insurance. And what he does now is has this clinic or the traveling clinic where he basically takes blood work of people. And he also does specific gene testing. And based on the information that they get back, whatever they might be deficient in is what they supplement with. And depending on the different gene tests that come back, they again supplement for those gene deficiencies. And this is why Dana White is feeling so great, is because, you know, he did all this blood work, they supplement for the deficiencies, they change the lifestyle and change the habits of whatever they were doing before, food, exercise, specific protocols like that, rest, recovery, grounding, breath work, all that stuff. And lo and behold, someone like Dana White's like, this is the only way to go about your healthcare moving forward. I'll never go to a Western doctor. So, I mean, I'm not sure what you know about like how medicine is kind of shifting in this regard. Like, big time names like this are doing these blood work tests, getting all kinds of information, where their minerals and vitamins are at. Another marker that they talk about is homocysteine, which I guess is an amino acid that if it's too elevated in your bloodstream, you can't break down raw material for usable energy. And they say that a lot of folks have this level of homocysteine that's too high that they can't break down enough raw material into usable energy. I think I'm getting it right. So people like Dana White are putting these people on a pedestal and talking about the benefits of this, which is just interesting to me, having a gym, having a chiropractor, having a physical therapist. Like, where's medicine going? Because obviously we know pharmaceuticals are just band-aids. Doctors just want to keep people on drugs. This is the cycle that keeps going. And even though we have all this information and we have all this knowledge in the world, people are sicker and sicker than ever. Younger and younger people are having more and more issues, mental and emotional health, heart disease, heart attacks, diabetes, you name it. The younger and younger people are starting to get these types of diseases, cancer in people under 50. It's just interesting to me that we have all this knowledge and yet we're sicker than ever. So like, what are your thoughts about like where medicine goes? Like, how important are guys like you and me in this industry, helping people become healthier, feel better, live longer, et cetera?
I think we're in, like, I don't know if renaissance is the right word. That sounds probably a little too much, but like that Dana White example right there, I think that is maybe not necessarily the future, but going to be a very big part of it. I just think we're still very far away, because right now that stuff is probably super expensive and only people like Dana White can afford it. Right.
Actually, I'll push back a little bit on that. So blood tests like that are just $500. For the first examination. So I didn't do this. My wife did it. She heard about this through a friend. And when I heard about this through her friend, and then I was listening at the same time to this podcast, I was like, wait a minute, this has got to be the same thing that's happening with 10X. Now, Grant Cardone, the influencer, was a main reason why 10X has been exploded, how Gary connected with Dana, and then Dana uses his platform to just blow these people up. So this concept is relatively new. So my wife did these blood tests. It's $500 for the blood test. And then the gene tests, like I was talking about, they're $250. And apparently you only have to do them once in your life to get the information. And then from that information, they could, you know, depending on what information you get back, you then buy the specific supplements for the deficiencies. Now there, it can get pretty expensive, I bet. So not your average person can do, you know, a $1,700 8-week nutrition program. But at the same time, it still might be doable. Like, cause you got people doing these $1,200 Ozempic shots. Like how, have you dealt with anybody that has been on that? Have you seen any negative side effects or like this is what I'm talking about. It's just like people will go through, like will go to that length to lose weight and have like a, you know, diabetes drug suppressing their appetite versus doing this the right way and figuring out what you might be deficient in, supplement with it, change your fucking lifestyle. Then long term, you're going to feel better and, you know, look better, all that stuff. So like, what are your thoughts on all this stuff?
So I have like a very minimal experience. When I say like experience, I just know like a couple people, like a friend's dad or something that's like gone on Ozempic or something like that. And he like broke his ankle or something like that because everything's just super brittle.
Fast weight loss though, or no?
Yeah, I mean, look, the dude looks good, I won't lie, but at what cost? I don't actually know. I don't know, right? So I don't know. I think we are at like the turn, right? Like people are starting to, I don't want to say use the term wake up because that sounds a little aggressive, but
I get what you're saying.
People are starting to understand that there is a different route to go than just, hey doc, what should I do? Here, right? Because like, even like you said, $500 for that and then $250 for that for a lot of people, and then all the supplements, right? As opposed to maybe you have some crappy insurance, but at least you have insurance that covers your Ozempic shot, right? Or whatever it is, heart medication. So it's $20 every time you go to pick it up. So I do think there is like a turning of the tides with some of that stuff. I think it's just going to be a very long time until it's a little bit more accessible for people.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, we have the bigger names that are starting to talk about it. It's still just a small sect of us though. Like we're in it and we're in it deep. So we're like seeing it, but your average American still would never even fathom in a million years going to get their like blood testing so they can supplement whatever it is. They just want Huberman to be like, you need magnesium. So they're like, cool.
Right.
And that wasn't like a dig at Huberman. He's just, a lot of regular people know who he is. And like,
if
he says you need magnesium, they're just going to go buy it.
Well, now, he's a top 10 podcaster in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's fucking blown up.
He is, which is good because people like him, he is a very smart guy and he'll do a good job of being like, you need A, B, and C, not X, Y, Z, right?
But you know what else gives him credibility is the fact that he's, oh no. Oh, are you still there?
Yeah, I got you.
Oh yeah. Sorry. The fact that he's tied in with Stanford, that gives him all this credibility and people feel more comfortable. Oh, he's a Stanford professor. Okay. That's great. I got to give him credit though, because he is said on record that he was skeptical about talking about psychedelics or some of the esoteric stuff that he brings up when it comes to mental and emotional health. But he says that, you know, now that he's got this platform and people in academia are kind of understanding where he's coming from, that he has a little bit more autonomy to express his views on some esoteric type of practices, let's say like psychedelics. Whereas before, if he started talking about his MDMA experiences, which he's on record talking about, he may have been in jeopardy of getting fired. And I felt this way when I was a teacher. I started my podcast back in 2017. Like I was self-censoring. I didn't even realize that I was self-censoring because, you know, if somebody hears this, I can get fired. And I hated that feeling. And I don't wish that on anybody. I think that's a big piece to health and wellness and longevity and performance is to express your truth. And if you are suppressing anything for long periods of time, it can catch up with you, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally.
Oh, for sure. And it's good to have people like that who are, you know, they can say just from experience, right? They know they've seen this work for themselves. And he's also very good at being like, I'm not telling you to do this. I'm just telling you my experience. And I think that's where a lot of people, you know, he's good at, he'll experiment on himself, with
what he's got a lab. Yeah, he's got a lab. So he's doing it. He's doing it more than how we experiment on ourselves. Right.
Right. Right. But it's just good to have somebody with like that background, that knowledge to
100%
be open and good at presenting it, not in a dogmatic way. And because I think that's what people need. And I do think that people are starting to get more information from a guy like him and do a little bit more on their own. Maybe not a ton, but they're still like, okay, I've tried this route. I've tried the doctor's route, right? And it's not really working. So like, let me see what this guy has to say or this guy. Like, oh, I tried that and like that worked. I think people are starting to understand like something's off. Let me...
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, it's unfortunately we're still in the like academia world where it's like, you know, if Huberman wasn't a professor at Stanford, but still had everything else exactly the same, people would be like, who's this guy?
Right. You would he be as credible? You could argue no.
Exactly. And there's a lot of people that, you know, there's super credible people in the medical field and super credible people not in the medical field. But the label of just not being in it, like.
Let's look at Joe Rogan, for example. I mean, he's a comedian, right? So you shouldn't be taking any information from him. He's just a fucking comedian. And good thing with him is like, he can fall back on saying, don't listen to me. I'm fucking dumb. I'm a comedian. But at the same time, like, he's dropping all kinds of knowledge and everybody knows that like his God is the longevity and performance God. What can I do to make myself smarter? The alpha brain. What can I do to make myself stronger? Jiu-jitsu, kettlebells.
Yep.
What can I do to make myself funnier? Oh, writing, learning how to be the best writer possible. Microdosing mushrooms. Like he's the guy that I've learned so much from and he's what? Just a fucking comedian? But I will say, I think like comedians today are so important. They're probably the most important people when it comes to the folks putting out information because I mean, yes, there's the academic side and the Hubermans of the world that are very put together and back all their stuff up. But it's like too much of that is just it's hard to digest.
Yeah.
But when you got a comedian and somebody who has been like connecting with high level folks for the last 15 years on this podcast, like a Rogan, like and he brings that information to you in a lighthearted way, it's like, oh. Okay. It resonates with me a little different when just a normal fucking guy who just built his legacy or built his, whatever you want to call it, his own thing from scratch, just being a little comedian to an actor to host on Fear Factor to blowing the fuck up on the podcast unintentionally. It's like, okay, it's way more digestible and it's just like a normal guy telling you like what works for him. And I don't know. I fucking love Rogan. He's been one of my massive like influences the last 8 or 9 years or however long I've been listening to him. But yeah, dude, we're in an interesting place. But I think like you said, people are starting to have a different approach to their healthcare and wellness and all that stuff. But I will say this has been 1 hour of chatting. It just went by really fast.
Oh, wow. That was quick.
We are at 12:30 and I want to respect your time. I said we were going to do this for an hour. Where can people find you? Like I said, I told you this before off the podcast. I'm a big fan of yours. I think your content is very good. You're one of the guys that I like going to for the information you're putting out regarding clubs, kettlebells, sandbags, Bulgarian bags. You're doing a lot of the unconventional stuff and you're bringing it to people that have no idea about this stuff and you're making it cool.
That's the goal.
And you're making it fun. At least that's what I see from afar. So
thank you.
I think that's really cool.
That's the goal. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely, man. And it's like a lot of people, I'm sure. I mean, you've blown up in the last 6 months, right? I remember following you, I think at like 7,000-8,000 followers on Instagram. And then you went from there to like 100,000. And then from there to 200,000. If you got a little, a few extra seconds here, what has been the top 3 to 5 things that you've done differently in that 6 months time to blow yourself up like that? And what do you think what do you think you need to keep doing to keep that going at that rate?
So funny enough, what originally got me like my initial blow up, it was one video. It was just me demonstrating kettlebell complex to the class that I teach weekends. Hey guys, this is our kettlebell complex today. We're going to do this, and this. Rest for this time, this many sets, right? And that video just took off. Like that got me like 80 or so thousand followers in a month. Something happened with the video where the audio got taken down. So like 5 months after I posted that, maybe four, I was like, huh, this video got messed up. Like, let me post it again. And the same thing happened. I was like, what the fuck? So it's honestly, it's very specific to that. So that one video, I've tried studying it. I don't fully know what it is. But I do think there is something to teaching a class. Is like, I'm not just like the random shirtless dude in his garage,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it makes me a little bit more approachable as a coach. Like, oh, he's not just doing this himself. Like, this isn't only for him. He's telling 25 other people, to do it. I think it's also, so a few things I try and do with my content is I like to make it what I call take homeable, have something to take home with it, right? So whether that's a new cue that you can use for a new exercise, a few exercises that are good for jujitsu or something like that, or like a complex to throw into your workout. So that gives you something to take with it.
Yeah.
And so that's been super helpful, trying to be a little bit more mindful of that. And one of the things that helped a lot that we were talking about before a little bit is I took like an email copyright course that my business coach made me take to kind of get better at emails. And that made me better at writing captions. So, you know, if I have a post that's just like, hey, here's this workout for today. It's all you need is one kettlebell. So one that makes it very take homeable is, oh, I just need one kettlebell. I can do this whole workout. Awesome. But also like each caption, I try and have like some sort of lesson in there. So it keeps people around. So I could be like, hey, here's why you should use kettlebells, or it has absolutely nothing to do with the post. So that has kind of allowed me to, I think, make posts just a little bit more engaging as opposed to just like, oh, here's this guy giving me a workout. And just putting my personal side on things, I think it helps people realize I'm just a regular person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not some robot.
Yeah, well, your passion definitely comes through on your posts. And I've stolen a lot of like ideas from you. I've like, it's genius to fucking get filming when you're teaching a class. I'm like, I'm doing it every single day. Why don't I have somebody just filming that? It's just like,
it's right there. It's so easy. It's just right in front of us. Yeah. I didn't even realize it until this past year.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's cool. I stolen that from you. Well, like I said, you're doing some cool things. Tell everybody where they could find more of your stuff. And if you have any programs or anything you're trying to promo, now would be the time.
So you can find me on TikTok and Instagram. It's just @PatDamiano_. And then my program, my kettlebell program, Project Bellplex, is the links in my bio for that. You can get a free 7 days to try it out. See if it's for you. If it's not, no worries. If it is, come join the fam.
Awesome. Very cool, man. And how many generations Italian are you?
What do you mean?
Like, you have family that's off the boat? You speak Italian? How hardcore are you?
I'm fake pretend hardcore New York Italian.
Yes. Okay.
So I speak like the tiniest bit of Italian just because I took it in school. My dad's grandfather's from it. So my great grandfather's from Italy, if I'm not mistaken. I gotta double check.
A few generations ago.
Fairly removed. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, buddy. Well, thank you so much for your time today. This was really cool. Yeah. I'm glad I got to know you a little bit. Like I said, I'm a big fan and I'm looking to promote you and promote people like you who are preaching the good word, really putting out content that's super helpful and inspiring. So keep doing your thing, pal. Appreciate everything that you do. And this was really fun.